Writing for the New Republic during Mitt Romney's 2012 bid for President of the United States, Walter Kern said of Mormonism that it was, quote, more than a religious endeavor. It constitutes America's longest experiment with communitarian idealism, promoting an ethic of frontier-era burden-sharing that has been lost in contemporary America with increasingly dire social consequences, end quote. That experiment began in the 19th century, and a good number of French writers from the July Monarchy into the Third Republic were attuned to Mormonism's social motives, peculiarities, and reach, though they were also fearful of its consequences. Collège de France professor Alfred Maury wrote in the Revue des Deux Mondes in 1853 that this polygamous sect of the American West embodied a unique form of socialism that had infiltrated Protestant America. It had done so, he added, with such vigor, perseverance, and unprecedented colonizing energy that it made France's colonial enterprise in Algeria look weak by comparison. In my presentation today, I wish to establish the how and why of Mormonism's socialist classification in the French imagination from 1848 to the 1860s, and to speculate on how it shaped the illustrations and novels of Albert Robida. Robida's scholarship has devoted precious little attention to Mormonism in his oeuvre, perhaps because it seems so incidental to his prolific visual record. Nor has a vibrant surge in historical and cultural attention to Mormonism turned its eyes on the transnational implications of its early reception in France. Each scholarly field would benefit from a closer examination of Mormon figures in Robida, and more than just to fill a gap. In 1962, René Raymond noted the ridicule heaped on this legendary sect starting in 1832 and gaining momentum in 1848, given its originality, the singularity of its revelation, and the oddity of its social mores. Raymond claims that by 1860, Mormons had gained a place in the gallery of conventional representations of America, to the point, in fact, of becoming symbolic types who represented all Americans. The same conclusion was drawn more recently by Jacques Porte in a piece entitled From Mormons to Americanism. This claim is a curious one, to say the least, since in the United States, Mormons became one of the most important 19th century heretical foils to American religious and political identity. American writers never characterized Mormons as socialist. They were constructed instead as religiously, culturally, economically, and even racially different, not white, conflated, as historian Paul Reeve says, with nearly every other problem group in the 19th century, blacks, Indians, immigrants, and Chinese. What was other for Anglo-American voices became in France, on the contrary, emblematic of America. So you'll note this satirical illustration in Life magazine in 1904 that visualizes this construction of mixed-race Mormon families. Robida's most sustained caricatures of Mormons came in two illustrated novels, Voyage très extraordinaire de Saturnin Farandoul in 1879 and Le XXe siècle in 1883. As caricatures, their representational plasticity revels in the unpleasant or laughable aspects of their subject by accentuating certain characteristics. Sometimes, as Bertrand Tillier says, as a charge qui outre pour ridiculiser. Mostly, though, they incline toward the dessin d'humour, detached enough from reality to extract pleasant, unusual, or even absurd aspects through facetiousness or fantasy. The novels were not his first Mormon caricatures, and so an overview, I think, is in order. In 1869, early in his career with the Illustrated Press, Robida produced a full-page drawing for the journal Paris Caprice. And this cheeky rejoinder to a French feminist, Olympe Audouard, she is alluded to up here. She had gone through Utah and came back giving these lectures on polygamy and the social experience of polygamy, but was actually really, really glowing. She provided these glowing reviews of Mormon social life. You see also the domestic bliss that's suggested by a central heart and a Cupid or Mercury-like figure. this allegory down here on the right, who's planting a Mormon flag on the Capitol, Paris. In July 1870, Robida inserted a drawing, Nouvelle du Grand Lac Salé, into Le Journal Amusant. This was part of a spread on the excavations at Les Arènes de Lutèce, on the Rue Monge. I just wanted to show you a little bit part of the imagery that comes from that same issue in which this figures. Unlike the usual crowded visual field and material excess of his aesthetic, it suggests the wide open spaces of the American West, a barren landscape in which two dogs review a Mormon polygamist whose reserve is betrayed by his broom, if you can see the broom, while his elegant wives are armed for a military exercise, perhaps an allusion to the Utah Territorial Legislature enfranchising the female vote in February of the same year, so about 6 months before. In the 1880s, after founding the weekly journal La Caricature, Robida made several drawings of Mormons in the context of public debate over the Naquet law on divorce, which was passed in 1884. Here, Robida uses Marianne and mythological figures to depict the new geography of France on the left. So Robida did all these drawings. He also did some of the text here on the right, called Le Tour de France, I think. Yes. In his accompanying story, two American visitors tour France. A certain Telemachus Croxon travels under the tutelage of a shady Chicagoan, Célestin Bigaral, a Civil War colonel, photographer, anatomy professor, and Mormon preacher. And in Saturnin Farandoule, his clever parody of Jules Verne's Le Tour du Monde en 80 jours, Robida exploded the premise of polygamy to rather comic and misogynistic effect. Farandoule, his Lieutenant Mandibule, all of their crew, they all convert to Mormonism and head to Salt Lake City to become polygamists. Note the gender division by the framing. We see women of all shapes, sizes, hairstyles, and the racial diversity of a globalized Mormon household, including French, Mexican, Chinese, Irish, Russian, Peruvian, and African women. And I'm leaving out some of the others just because I got tired of the list. Robida published Le XXe Siècle in 1883 in a lavish edition richly illustrated with his 263 in-text vignettes and 50 hors-text lithographic plates. As the title implies, it is a futuristic novel that recounts events unfolding in the year 1953, 70 years ahead of in the future. The novel tracks the path of one Hélène Colobry through a series of career and personal misadventures. The daughter of a cabinet minister and unmarried pensioner living with a banking family, the Pontos, Hélène eventually marries the Pontos' son, Philippe, but only after she saves him from certain doom at the hands of tyrannical Mormons. Ponto Père is a member of the outgoing government, and in Robida's scheme, it's a very fantastical scheme, which glosses the revolutionary upheaval of 1848 and 1871, the country allows the opposition party to rule by changing its government every 10 years. It's a clever idea. 3 months of vacation, that's the best part of the idea, culminate in national celebrations and a mock revolution. Everyone storming government buildings, setting fire to the city, tearing up pavé for barricades, and competing in a barricade competition in an exposition universelle. The presumption is that a ritualized, performative insurgency releases pent-up political frustrations. But as the festivities unfold, Ponto and other politicians are alarmed because of a looming threat across the English Channel. It turns out that the Mormons now occupy England. The English live in India. Chased out of the Rocky Mountains by New China from the west and New Germania to the east, the Mormons are now developing strategies for colonizing continental Europe. The Mormons appear as if from nowhere in the novel, which contrasts the apparent libertinage of polygamy with the strictures of their misogynistic civil society. The men revel in taverns while the women slave at home or in factories. Insubordinate wives can be sent to a correctional house, as you see here. The House of Lords is now the House of Mormon Bishops, and the electoral system of the House of Commons is based entirely on polygamy. To be a parish électeur, a man needs two wives. To represent an arrondissement requires four, six to be in the upper chamber, and eight for higher office. Robida insists on the rigid hierarchy of Mormon patriarchy, a social system that incentivizes the accumulation of wealth and wives for status. So when the unmarried Fidi Ponto is sent to England for banking business, to his surprise, the Mormons arrest him and throw him into bachelor's prison. Unbeknownst to Philippe, it is illegal to go about unaccompanied on Sundays. Maintenant que la perfide Albion est devenue extraordinairement shocking, le dimanche est le jour du péril. If the réfractaire matrimonial is not rehabilitated by the end of the week, he risks exile to a colonie matrimoniale for a forced marriage. It should be funny. I hope it's funny. It was funny to me when I read it. So the Pontos dispatch Hélène in a desperate attempt to save their son, and what happens is she poses as his fiancée. They end up falling in love and get married, just like in a 1930s screwball comedy in American cinema history. In short, Robida's caricature exploits this anxiety at a viral mormonisation forcée. Le XXe siècle recasts elements of l'année terrible, or the terrible year, that brutal period when France had succumbed to an ascendant Germany in the Franco-Prussian War, including the Siege of Paris, and then passed through savage internal strife again during the Paris Commune of 1871. Robida remained nonpartisan during the Commune and throughout his life, but he was very close to the events of the terrible year. He documented everyday life during the siege and Commune in his journal and an album of drawings. He personally knew several Communard leaders. And since he was enrolled in the 74th Battalion of the National Guard during the Siege of Paris, and then had a laissez-passer as a secretary to the 20th arrondissement, he had free rein to roam the city and its suburbs. His perception of the Commune as noisy and festive nourished his depictions of revolution in the novel Le XXe siècle, as the entire nation joins in the revolutionary revelry to welcome in a new government. Art historian Sandrine Doré has also shown that Robida lifted graphic elements from the Album du Siège for Le XXe siècle. And finally, adding to elements inspired by the Commune, the novel also incorporated elements from 1848, like the Campagne des Manqués, that brought down the July monarchy. The novel, which is what I'm trying to say here, is infused with the social memory of 1848 and the terrible year. It's all throughout the novel. Though Robida was no revanchiste, it is no surprise that he would conceive a tale marked by external or internecine aggression, however unassuming it comes across in satire. The Second Empire had fallen, and the Third Republic would struggle to rise above the Versailles' brutal suppression of barricaded fédéré insurgents during the infamous Bloody Week. Robida, though, draws an unlikely parallel between Mormons and Communards. The religious exiles substituting for a class of political insurgents who threatened to transform Paris and French society. And he does so through the Mormon prison system I alluded to earlier with Philippe Ponto at the moment of the revolution where he is incarcerated. The colonie matrimoniale of forced marriage, to which Mormon leadership deports celibates unwilling to wed, is on the island of New Caledonia, an unmistakable allusion to the deportation of Communards to the penal colony of Nouméa. Coming as it does, excuse me, I should point out that the Third Republic banished around 4,500 Communards to that penal colony in Nouméa. So Louise Michel, Henri Rochefort, and thousands of others, right? Coming as it does shortly after the state amnesty to participants and sympathizers of the Commune in 1880, the novel's allusion to the Commune's aftermath would have registered instantly with French readers. So what explains this odd constellation in Robida's novel that refracts the terrible year through an eccentric religious sect isolated in the American West? As the caricatured Utah polygamists play foil to cosmopolitan Parisians, what makes it more than fanciful and farfelu, something other than a whimsical association of insurgent Communards and Mormon communitarians? Though several layers obscure a complete answer to these questions, I will provide one interpretive frame. No direct connection, let alone resemblance, links Mormons to the Paris Commune. There's no direct connection. Yet, I do believe a metonymic link built on several idées reçues may have suggested itself to Robida. Across the 1850s and 1860s, Mormons had been construed in the French imagination as socialists, as utopians, as communists, the prevailing view having cast them in the same mold as the dreaded Spectre Rouge of 1848 and 1849 at the creation of the Second Republic. And this is an image from Cham, a nice caricature of Cabet, Pierre Leroux, Proudhon, Considérant, right, the inheritor of Fourier, Fourier's ideas, Ledru-Rollin, and then, of course, the Prince Louis and Bonaparte, Napoleon Bonaparte. Those idées reçues castigated Mormonism's charismatic claims and denounced its social practices, yet grudgingly acknowledged its collective achievements in the Utah Territory. Among French writers who were interested in Mormonism were armchair critics, to be sure, but positivist thinkers weighed in as well. Mary May authored an essay in Le Moniteur Universel. A series of articles came out in the conservative Republican venues like the Revue des Deux Mondes. And you should note that the self-proclaimed mission of the Revue des Deux Mondes went something like this. Quelquefois, ce qui occupe le plus vivement nos esprits se trouve agité au même moment vers un autre point du globe, et ce ne sera pas l'un des rapprochements les moins intéressants qu'offrira ce recueil que de voir les mêmes principes diversement compris et appliqués en France. Louis Rebaud's widely influential book, Études sur les réformateurs ou les socialistes modernes, followed a landmark ethnographic study by Jules Rémy, Voyage au pays des Mormons. And Rebaud's chapter on the Mormons, I should point out, was by far the longest in his two-volume set. There were no Mormons in France, and yet it occupies the biggest chapter in his book. In 1861, Hippolyte Taine and Élisée Reclus both wrote extensive review essays of Rémy's book. They all classified Mormonism as a socialist or communist contagion, similar to those indigenous socialisms modeled by the other major utopians of the 1830s and 1840s, Saint-Simon, Fourier, Cabet, not to mention a dizzying array of others largely forgotten today. And I'll point out just quickly, this is a watercolor from Nauvoo, Illinois, which the Mormons built. The Icarians, the Icariens, under Étienne Cabet's direction, ended up buying the central core of buildings from Mormons who left as pioneers towards the Great Salt Lake in 1847. It's in French. In any case, these romantic socialisms constituted a pre-Marxist foment against individualism and against materialism that mingled utopian spatial and social ideals, Christian messianism, communist concepts of communal property and workspaces, working class associationism, and feminism. Now, as we know, the liberal, Republican, and Bonapartist factions won out in parliamentary elections in 1849, and Louis-Napoleon became president and soon thereafter emperor. Most writings on Mormonism were absorbed into a ferocious anti-socialist, anti-communist campaign in which conservative allies rallied together to undo socialist thinking and undermine the Démocsoc party. Agénor de Gasparin, a Protestant député, saw in Mormon ideology a mixture of christianisme mercantile and programme socialiste. Hortense Dufay labeled Mormonism a socialisme unitaire, while Rémy said it was a socialisme évangélique. Rémy insisted, in terms that would resonate later with Robida's depiction of Mormons, il faudrait être aveugle pour ne pas voir que la société mormone se complaît à entrevoir dans l'avenir la conquête du monde entier. Alfred Maury, imperial librarian and a Collège de France professor, worried about a Mormon infiltration. Le socialisme est venu en quelque sorte se greffer sur ce mouvement religieux. Il annonce une régénération sociale complète. For his part, the literary critic Émile Montaigu feared that Mormonism was gros de bouleversement et de révolution, and that it would bring with it terrible violence, unavoidable violence. It is unclear whether Robida had read Rebaud's popular right-wing critiques of socialist reformers, but what is certain is that Rebaud's book, updated and reissued over seven times between 1848 and 1864, ensconced Mormonism in the pantheon of those very thinkers and movements on the left whose ideas still echoed in Paris as late as the Commune in 1871. Once Robida arrived in Paris to pursue a career in the Illustrated Press, he would likely have been aware of the post-1848 anti-socialist reaction to Mormons, now distilled in a commonplace in public discourse. Le XXe siècle evokes the gender debates of Romantic socialism by characterizing Mormonism as oppressive to women in a context of female social liberation. The novel depicts an egalitarian world in which women have achieved career status and political representation on equal footing with men. Women in 1953 work in fields that had been the strict province of men: medicine, law, and politics, even the military, in the striking hors-texte plate of the women's battalion, or the battalion of the feminine supremacy. These images recall a tradition of mobilized women in visual culture, dating at least back to the Great Revolution, right? The women storming Versailles. And even in Robida's own 1870 drawing, Nouvelle du Grand Lac Salé, you have women who are armed and mobilized. In the novel, Mormons threatened the enlightened space that organizes Hélène Colobry's trajectory. Now, critics had recoiled at polygamy, linking it to communist programs and condemning it as deviant sexuality, slavery, and a violation of the marriage contract with implications for property law. As one anti-communist pamphleteer had asserted in 1849, l'abolition de la famille, du mariage, la communauté complète des femmes et des enfants, voilà la conséquence forcée de la communauté des biens. The tenor of objections to polygamy was shaped by two translations of the same expose of women's life in Utah, Female Life Among the Mormons, both appearing in 1856, La Femme chez les Mormons and Les Harems du Nouveau Monde. It's a very, yes, enticing. If only things were that way, by the way. It never was like the harems, right? Élisée Reclus believed that Mormonism enslaved its people through the subservience of woman. 10, that it abased women. Such views are rather sobering, but satirists couldn't have asked for an easier excuse for sexual innuendo and frivolity. Whether Robida was sexist or a prophet celebrator of women's rights is up for debate, and this is the challenge of working in visual irony. But what is more certain is that while the Mormons take up very little narrative space in Le XXe siècle, they nevertheless figure as the primary foil and social alternative to a liberated bourgeois and republican France. Mormonism had thus been instrumentalized largely by conservative critics to allegorize a host of domestic issues that were viewed through the prism of an imagined Mormon society transplanted to France. It's the écran projection that Peggy talked about earlier. The novel's Mormon colonizers in the British Isles represented an external threat akin to the Prussians, and in their radical social programs, they threatened the Republic from within. So Robida's substitution of Mormons for communards had some grounding in the perception of Mormon radicalism dating from 1848 through at least the Commune. Surprisingly, this view of Mormons came as French writers in the 1880s were beginning to emphasize virtually to the contrary that Mormons were rampant, dangerous industrialists and capitalists. So there must be a little more to the story. In the Manichaean conflict of stereotypes generated in the aftermath of the Commune, the left took it as a tragedy of war, while the right saw it as embodying the dangerous politics of utopianism. Here I'm talking about the Commune, right? Yet the decade during which Le XXe siècle appeared was also marked by Gambetta's impassioned plea before the National Assembly for qu'une France et qu'une République. This was the moment of amnesty, right, for the communards. That unity was to be achieved by laying la pierre tumulaire de l'oubli sur les crimes et sur les vestiges de la commune. We are therefore left to wonder what role an apt yet obsolescing stereotype of socialist Mormons was playing for Robida at this particular juncture in French history. I would argue that in Le XXe siècle, Robida deftly cast Mormons as villains because he could do so without vilifying either the Versaillais or the communards in the post-amnesty Republican détente. It was a dexterous choice, to say the least. The Mormons became a figure for revisiting the terrible year with distance and humor, wrapped in an aesthetic devoid of overt politics. Robidas did exactly what French critics of Mormonism had done before him. He allegorized the movement to navigate the challenging ideological waters of early Third Republic France. Mormonism fascinated as much as it frightened, calling into question traditional marriage, sex, labor structures, and politics, the entire socio-political order. In this, we begin to detect how Mormon exiles in the faraway American West, utopian perpetrators of crimes worthy of condemnation, could take the place of deported communards in this post-amnesty Republican moment of cultural and state consolidation. Thank you.